everyone, and welcome to the Paper Plane Cocktail Hour. I am one of your hosts, Amy Loewenberg, Senior Relations Manager for New York Now, Community Spotlight Podcaster, and all-around retailer advocate. My focus is to bring you important information, conversations, and perspectives from both sides of the aisles.
And I am your co-host, Sarah, the paper nerd. I am the founding editor and editor-in-chief of Stationery Trends Magazine. I also write about stationery on my site, The Paper Nerd, and I even host another monthly podcast on the topic, The Paperfold. I've been covering the stationery and gift industry since 1997, but never did I imagine then that I'd one day be covering the market here in the virtual space.
So throughout 2022, Sarah and I will be, or we have been, raising our glasses alongside our pencils as we have shared stories, compare notes, and celebrate three of our all-time favorite topics, stationery, connections, and cocktails.
Cheers. Cheers. So we divided 2022 into phases. In the first quarter, we examined members of our community in the initial phase of their careers. In May, as the second quarter began, we moved to the next phase, the middle stage. And as we head into fall, we shifted into our final stage, maturity.
These would be more established brands that everyone looks up to and admires and even strives to emulate just a bit as they continue along their own path. In the case of retailers, these are brands with not just one store, but several thriving business channels, as do these gentlemen. I have known them for years, and I'm happy to call them friends. Sarah, why don't you share who we are having cocktails with today?
I would love to. We're chatting with Michael Schultz and Douglas Duncan of Cursive. Michael and Douglas actually started their career in the meatpacking district 25 years ago with their wholesale stationery company, Motel Deluxe. I'm thinking a lot of our paper nerds out there fondly remember that range.
I do. And for those who can't see me, I am raising my hands. So after Motel Deluxe, they also had two Cursive stores, and I've had the pleasure of shopping in both of them. One of them was in New York City's iconic Grand Central Terminal for 11 years, and one was with an ABC Carpet and Home for 15, until the COVID-19 pandemic reared its ugly head and unfortunately upended these very long-run establishments.
Oy vey. So making the best of a very dire situation, they doubled down on New York and opened two shops in the West Village, one of my favorite neighborhoods, even though this ex-New Yorker still gets lost every time I venture there. One shop is true to the original Cursive vision, while Cursive Home is the brand's extension into home goods. Both still have a tightly focused concept with the simple mission of cultivating joy. Meanwhile, the Cursive duo has established themselves as a strong industry presence.
Agreed. They are mentors to many and friends to all. Although consistently evolving, Cursive offers gift, stationery, home, and lifestyle products. And as you mentioned earlier, Sarah, they definitely each store definitely has its own flair, but very easily identified as the Cursive brand. So when you are in New York City and playing downtown, make sure to stop in one or both of their locations, as they're actually only four blocks away from one another. And maybe, just maybe, you will see their sweet new child, Slinky, their long-haired Dachshund puppy.
Aw, well, that sounds good. Yeah. Let's bring them on already.
Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome to the Paper Plane Cocktail Hour. Sarah and I are so happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you very much. We're excited.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. All right. So let's just dive right in, okay? Michael, for you. But you know what, Doug? Just pipe on in if you got anything, because I know you got something here.
I have a big
Motel Deluxe was a target destination for us when I worked at Kate's Papery. We were all enamored with everything that you both put together then, just as I am completely enamored with what you both do now. I was in your ABC carpet pop-up. I was in your Grand Central store when you had them. And now we get to play in your two stores, Cursive New York and your newest child, Cursive Home. We clearly have seen nice growth in stores opening this year. And I'm curious about what you can share with our listeners about opening stores pre-2019 to post-2021-22. Is there anything that you can highlight as to what was good practices then for any of our listeners now that are looking to maybe open a new location to like, what are good practices now and any resources, advice?
Well, I think, you know, the pre-2019, I think at least for us, we were more, well, I guess we sort of learned some lessons in the 17 years that we had had stores before then, that, you know, really going over leases, like really scrutinizing your lease and making sure that that you fully understand the obligations of that lease. Mm-hmm. You know, we had gone over our leases and our agreements and stuff before, but we hadn't really fully, you know, taken it to the end of what could, you know, potentially happen. And I think now, I think it's very, very important to, you know, to have a team. Hopefully you have a team, even, or a potential team of people that can, you can run these things by and really take it out, you know, more than, you know, it's really easy to get caught up in the excitement. Oh, this storefront is really, really cute. I've always wanted to be on this block, but does it make financial sense? Is it a good fit with your landlord? We were really, really lucky when we completely started over and we, you know, opened the stores in the West Village. You know, all of our landlords we're in tenant-owned buildings. You know, they live upstairs. We know them, we know their names. You know, they you know, bring us, our landlord Donna brings us cookies. You know, it's just a different way. And I think that's where Doug and I, you know, we had a big corporate landlord in the MTA before. And it's just I think for us, it's just a much better fit having these.
Yeah. I mean, I think like one real world example of what we're talking about is just like, you know, like in the future, you have a thing in your lease where it's like, if the government, local, state, federal, or whatever is requiring you to shut down and you cannot be open, well, then we're not paying rent during that time. It's just like, it's like, what am I supposed to do? So, I mean, that's just one example of things that, I mean, again, you may or may not get that, but it's just kind of like things that didn't even occur to us before, where it's just, you know, yeah. It's,
well, we hadn't really gone through that before, like, right?
So, and yeah, just really going through with a fine tooth comb on the lease. I mean, just going back to our Grand Central lease, like when we got that, literally the lease was the size of a phone book. And we went to a lawyer and they went through the whole thing. And there were certain things we didn't like. And they were just kind of like, well, you know, it's the MTA. Do you want it or not? So we were like, oh, okay. But then after being there for 11 years and you talk to people, you realize where it's like, oh, well, some people actually did negotiate things. So don't think that just because it's there and they say it's written in stone, it's not written in stone until, you know, the landlord.
Until it is.
Review or whatever, right. So
that's a really, it's an interesting point. I didn't mean to interrupt you. It's a really interesting point. I think that a lot of people are really nervous to negotiate if they're not, you know, versed to it. And like, really the worst that can happen is that somebody says no, right?
Yeah. You really just have to go and to be willing to just walk away from it, you know, and there will be another space. You will find another one. We opened the, Cursive in a space, and you know, we were thinking that it was going to be temporary. We were just kind of testing it, and then we decided we wanted to stay, and we just couldn't work out a deal with our landlord, and we ended up moving the store 3 storefronts down on the same block. We got a really, you know, great, we got a good deal on it, a fair deal, and but we had to move it, you know, and didn't really want to pack up another store, you know, move it down the street while we were just about to open a, you know, a new bigger store. But sometimes you just have to do what you have to do.
I also think that compared to pre-2019, tenants have more the upper hand than they think they do at this point. Because again, I mean, I follow New York heavily, the real estate. I don't know the whole country, but like in general, sure. Travel, I get to San Francisco, I get to Atlanta. There's a lot of empty retail. Like, I mean, there was even before COVID, but it's just, I think that tenants have more power than they think they have, actually, compared to, you know, now. I think there's deals to be had.
Absolutely. So, well, you guys, you guys are an attractive tenant, you know, to a landlord. I mean, if your store is running and open and every day, like, that is a good thing for them to have in their building. And, you know, obviously, you know, if there's a lot of empty spaces, that's you become more valuable to them, right?
Yeah.
So my question is for Douglas. I first got acquainted with you both when you were running Motel Deluxe, which was a booth I could never miss. At the time, you were one of the few vendors that I knew of that was importing stationery from abroad. And everything was always so exquisite compared to what was going on stateside. At the time, I wasn't seeing really small trim sizes and Luke's Elements like velvet ribbon. At the time. And so now, of course, your cursive New York shop is a mecca for stationery lovers in the West Village. So I want to know, when you're walking a market now, what kind of ranges are you seeking?
Well, definitely. It's funny, obviously, with Motel Deluxe, all of our cards were handmade. There's not a lot of handmade out there anymore.
We wish we could find handmade cards.
No, there was, and the thing was, when you guys were doing Motel Deluxe, there was a lot of handmade, but it just wasn't in like that format. Like, you know, your cards were so, like, if a typical handmade card would have wire and an image and a, you know, it would have like everything but the kitchen sink on it, and your designs were like very luxe but very low key. They were smaller trim size with a piece of ribbon, you know. It was very different than what was going on in the handmade market in the US then.
I mean, I think part of that was just our aesthetic. We're both a bit more on the minimalist side and like things cleaner. And I also think just the fact that we are two men, and we kind of had, not that they were masculine, but there was more of a masculine bent to it, just clean, like, again, like not frilly per se, kind of, you know, straightforward. Oh, anyway, but then what am I looking for now? Anyway, I would love it if we could find it. But if it along the lines, things that you can find, like, for example, like, I'm a huge fan of Mowgli.
And there's
line where it's like, you know, I mean, it basically is handmade. I mean, I still don't even know how they do it, how they've mastered doing
it. A little bit of magic, I think, just kind of dabbled around.
But that's very appealing. And just, you know, they use very high quality cardstock.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm starting to see a couple more little handmade, like hand painted. Like, I found Tortoise Designs. The last, like, she's actually hand painting every item, which is cool to start seeing that again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's definitely a market for it. So, yeah. I mean, even though obviously there's more cost entailed in that, but, and again, we're in New York, but we find very little price resistance. I mean, people have no money, have no problem spending on cards. I'm always kind of amazed. People walk up with a handful of 12 cards and you ring it up and I'm like, how much is this? But customers don't seem to mind.
I mean, you guys get to observe customers in the wild, which I think is what, like, a lot of makers and a lot of people like me, you know, like, we really want to see, like, what are they looking for? What are they, you know, when your card buyers come in, are they still buying a dozen cards, or does it seem like they came in to buy one, or are they add-on sales? Like,
kind of all of the above. There's definitely people that are just running in for a birthday card. There's people that add on. And then I'm amazed that we have a number of people that, like, keep a stash. Like, I'll, you know, they'll come up with, you know, 8 birthday cards. And I'm just like, wow, you got a busy week on your hands with friends. And they're like, well, there's some, but they're like, I just like having them around, and you guys have great stuff. And I just, while I'm here, I'll get them. So, yeah.
I also think one of the best things that we did, I mean, we were lucky because we were in New York, but if I ever needed an ego boost or like to really understand how people were shopping cards, is I would go to Kate's in Soho and I would just stand there like for an hour, probably looked like I was a shoplifter or something. And I would just watch people shop the card wall.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. You know, you can learn a lot. Like, go, you know, if you're a maker, go to your local card shop, the best one that you think is really good, and hang out and watch people buy cards. And, well, you know, every single person, it just amazes me. Everyone always turns the card over.
Yep.
And it's like, what are they looking for, you know, when they're turning it over? They're not necessarily looking for price. I think they're just looking to see if the quality of and the design, if it's a total package.
Right, right. If it follows through. I tell my clients all the time, like, you have to think about what's on the back. What's on the back of the card is just as important.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sometimes yeah.
As what's yeah, on the back. They're looking totally. For a polished brand.
Yes. And they're totally and agree. Looking for, like, you know, that little bit of personality of who that company is on the back.
You know, well, like Imbued, right? Like that talk about yeah, personality yeah, on the back.
Her line that is has an amazing. It over. It's a completely different thing.
It's a completely. Like, I fell in love with it.
You know, there's always a little surprise, sort of something on the back. You know, that just makes you they're like, oh, I have to have this card, and to yeah. just see how people are shopping a card wall. You know, what are they looking for? What
sure.
What's standing out?
I'm just curious, to that end, can you tell me, can you name any names and tell me your the top performers amongst your stock?
Yeah, top performers. Let me see. Well, the aforementioned Mowgli does great. Mm-hmm. They go out as fast as they come in.
Really?
Yeah. Eile Paper Goods.
Oh, Eilee.
Yeah, yes, I think it's Eilee. Awesome. Eilee. Love her stuff, and that does very well. Scribble and Daub mm-hmm. out of the UK does those beautiful illustrations with like really saturated color.
And she hand colors all of them, which mm-hmm. is another, you know. And it's interesting because it's cards that perform well in our store have a very strong point of view right. about, and and also we only have 84 card fonts. So, you know, it's a small selection, and 40 something of those is birthday. So we have one whole wall of birthday, and then we have a mixed wall and, you know, a couple spinners. So our card, you know, we have to be specific in our buying, and we have to have a lot of different looks because you don't want to have, you know, one look. It's like we need. Yeah.
Yeah. Yet they all have to be sort of cohesive to your brand. Like,
they have to work together and be, you know, cursive, but they have to have their individual personality has to be strong.
That's cool. How many card ranges do you tend to have total? Like, how many do you order from regularly? I'm just curious.
I think we probably have maybe
30.
30? Okay. All right.
That's a lot for 84 pockets.
That's right. I'm the nitpicker. It's more than 84. You're not counting all this. No, one of those. I'll give you a count later. I'm going to the store today.
Yeah. We're gonna have to have a follow-up on this.
We don't have a giant massive card wall, you know, with 500 fronts on it. We have a very
sure. But you might have another couple spots where you might merchandise them. Yes. Like you, yes. like, right. Okay.
I know that community relations play a very important part to you both. And you both have created a very strong presence as mentors to many. So first of all, thank you for that, because I think that your voices and your knowledge and your experience is just so valuable for anybody who is not just starting out, but has been in business for a while. You guys have experienced so much. But tell us about who your mentors were or are, and some of the best advice that you received in your careers.
So there's two parts to that. Doug and I were really lucky that when we started Motel Deluxe, our very first the very first order we ever wrote for our own company was to Barney's. And Lisa, who was the buyer for the, I think it was Chelsea, I think it fell under Chelsea Passage. She really empowered us just in the way that she shopped the line and her enthusiasm for it. And that just continued throughout our the years of when we were doing wholesale. We had many, many, many amazing buyers who, you know, would drop little nuggets of wisdom, you know, about like, well, you know, maybe, you know, greeted cards sell better than not greeted cards, you know. And if you're listening to that, if you're paying attention to what they're saying, you know, it's gold. And we were both, I think it was lucky because there was two of us. And so if, you know, someone's talking and they're trying to sell, you know, there was somebody else behind listening and picking up on all of that stuff. And so we had buyers really, really, really taught us a lot and helped us along the way. And I think that definitely formed how we buy and how I view, you know, going in and looking at a line and, you know, hopefully, you know, offering a little bit of wisdom to the people that we buy from about, you know, what we're looking for and what the customers are looking for. And, you know, I mean, a simple thing is just changing the color of an envelope can just change, can take something in a whole different, you know, yeah, direction. And I don't, that's not necessarily something you would know unless somebody, you know, suggests that. And we were also incredibly flexible. When people would suggest something to us, we weren't like stuck into like, well, this is what we do and this is the only way to do it. And, you know, we never viewed it as our art. It was, we viewed it more as business with an art, you know, underlying.
I think that's a really important point to bring up too. Cause I mean, I know as a merchant, I talked to a variety of brands and ones who were very tied into their work, their art, their style. There was no conversation there. And, you know, whether you're coming from, like in my case, I was coming from a company that was telling me specifics on what our consumer was looking for and what they wanted. And then my job was to like make that happen. So you could find something that is so like 50-75% there, if we could just do a little tweak to it, it would completely fit into what our customer is seeking. And it was very clear to me that there were some people who were receptive to that ask and some that were not.
And if you can be, then you're going to go to them again and again and again, and you're just going to build a strong business. I mean, we had, we did crazy stuff. Like, what was that? That garden store, you know, the fancy, they had a huge one in Soho. They started in, anyway, it'll come to me. But they were like, you know, we were doing all these hand embellished stuff and they were like, well, we're not really doing this. We're really doing herbs. And I was like, we can do a line of cards with herbs. And they're like, you can? And I'm like, sure. And so we did this Smith and Hocken. So we did this whole thing with like rosemary sewn under organza and thyme. And it turned into a very, and they would come back to us and be like, hey, you know, we're thinking about doing this. Can you do this? And we're like, sure, we can do that. You know?
Yeah, man.
And it was fun.
Once you find someone who's going to collaborate with you, we were in. We're like, I can go to Michael and Douglas. They're going to get this done for me. And boom, check off my list. And I had 15 other things to do. By the way, I think I have a card left from Motel Deluxe with a penny. That is under organza. Is that you?
Yeah, it was
for
us.
Thoughts. Yeah.
Plenty for your thoughts. I like, it's like gold for me. I've held on to it for how long? I'm not mailing it. It's mine.
I mean, yeah, I love it. I think I have a couple. Oh, did you have something more to add? I'm sorry if I cut you off, Doug.
Oh, no, just we were talking mentors. And I would be remiss if I did not mention some dear friends of ours, Frederick Rambo and Alan Seppos, or of the Saru Group.
I remember them.
For, good God, 40 years now. They're still going, but they were early mentors and taught us a lot on numerous fronts, from everything of like, you know, when your company's young and you're having to almost dump every cent you make back into it because you're trying to grow, the advice was always have to remember to pay yourself first. You've got to get paid. If you're not making it, like, you can't dump it all back in. So that was good advice. And another advice that they gave us, which applies more to now being in retail, is just the whole idea of don't fall in love with your merchandise. Meaning, if you do something and it's a miss, just put it on sale and get rid of it. Don't let it sit there for a year and a half. If nobody's buying it, nobody's going to buy it. Just get it.
So, and that's also a really, really hard thing, because, you know, you find something and you love it and you want, you know, to support the...
Yep.
People, and sometimes it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
And you know, and there are a couple also. And one of the best things that they ever told us, because we were working together, they were like, divide, figure out like who's going to do what in the business. And so Doug does most of the financial stuff and all of that, and I do, you know, I don't know what I do, but I do something else. and like to let the person do it and trust that they're going to do it really well and don't get in their business. So like, I don't go down to Doug and be like, you know, how are you doing the financials and what are you doing? He does it. I trust him to do it. And we don't have arguments over that because, you know, I mean, couples argue.
Sure.
If you have it in a business, it's just, and it was really great advice. It was just like, okay, he's doing his thing. I trust him implicitly to do it. And I'm going to do my thing. And hopefully he trusts me to do that. And we don't have to have that overlap.
That's organized one.
Yes, Doug is organized. I am far from organized.
Yeah. Well, it feels like we have a yin and a yang, and it feels like it's a really good balance. But I think that advice is whether it's yin or yang or not, like it's great advice to actually let the person do the job who's doing that job and let them do it, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As long as they can do it, as long as it's running fine, like, there's no problem. But I like what you said about like not being too attached to something if it doesn't work. You know, I think, you know, as creatives, like sometimes we just get so invested in like what we're doing that, you know, if it doesn't succeed, we can't get that distance from it. But, you know, there's always new ideas and new things to try. If something doesn't work, you just have to kind of keep plugging away.
I mean, and I think that's always been a strong thing, you know, Doug and I, when we had Motel, you know, our stuff was copied. You know, we found out that we had a huge business with Papyrus. And then we found out that there was a company, you know, basically manufacturing our look in Canada. And they had, you know, we used to sell the Indigo Books and all this stuff, and they had taken it all away. And, you know, people were like, you got to do something. And you were like, no, we're not going to do that. It's going to be a waste of our time. And we have more ideas. I mean, we have more ideas than we could actually do. And so we'll just move on. And then we just, you know, we let that idea go and we, you know, developed other ideas.
And knowing when to move on. Yeah.
And that served us well. I think even in the retail, it's just like, you know, if that's not working, you know, what's your next idea?
I don't need a lawsuit as a part-time job.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Also, if the product is there, the consumer doesn't want to see it for all that time.
Yeah.
And then you guys need your energy on your business at hand, not on a lawsuit. So like know when to move on.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And you guys are creative enough that you'll always be able to think of another idea that no one's doing or another take on something. So you don't need to be married to a given idea or concept or theme. You're always, you know, you're always moving forward. So, you know,
we try.
You
do a good job.
That's all we can do. So obviously both of you do more than just dabble in both stationery and home and gift. And again, you have that really cool thing where you get to observe people in the wild and kind of see what they're gravitating to and what they're passing up and you know, what tends to resonate with them. So I'm curious how, if you see this like shopper behavior changing based on the events of the past few years. I mean, do you think these categories are perceived differently by today's consumers? And how is that boiling down at retail?
I mean, just speaking to like stationery specifically, I know it's technology still, but I just see the not backlash, but I think people are buying more cards and paper than ever. Mm-hmm. And like even young people that people always say like, oh, they're not into this stuff. They're totally into this stuff. We're selling more journals and cards than we ever have. And they appreciate the design. I think people are writing. I think people are, they want that connection. I think tech can get a little empty at times. So yeah, I think it's got legs now more than ever.
And I think that, you know, there are perceptions out there that like young people don't use journals and they don't send cards and they don't. And we just find that that's just completely not, you know, that's not the case. And that, you know, they're also sophisticated, you know, they know good design, they know paper quality. they, you know, they're looking for, you know, if the paper is sustainable and, you know, you're using non-toxic inks and like, they're much more aware than like when we were,
yes.
You know, I'll speak for myself. Like that wasn't even, I couldn't come in. It was like, if it was pretty, I was like, I was done. You know, that was it.
Yeah.
And,
totally.
And I like that. And I like, and they ask questions, you know, they want to know the makers. Yeah. I can stand there and have a conversation about, you know, the makers of the stuff. And as retailers, we should know that, you know, that's part of the reason why we buy it. And so it's part of our thing is to pass that on. And so then they can then pass that on, you know, whoever gets the card can be like, oh, this is a really cool card. They can have a conversation about that. It's really about our job is to facilitate communication. That's really what we're there to do, is to help people communicate.
Right. And the thought process that's going into buying a journal by today's 25-year-old is totally different than the thought process that a 25-year-old would have even had a decade ago. I always think that privacy, they must be thinking a little bit more about privacy. Like all of a sudden, this doesn't feel so private anymore. Yeah. But, you know, my thoughts, I just held up my phone, but my thoughts in a journal, like this is mine. And, you know, it's not... like it's really mine, but you know, they also just like seem to partner with brand. I mean, they see, you know, buying something. I mean, they're like partnering with that brand. I mean, they choose you, you know, to spend their money, but they're kind of, you know, partnering with that journal that they buy. It's, you know, it's a commitment for their thoughts.
Yeah. And I think they're committing to Cursive as a brand also, you know,
yes,
they're,
totally.
They're going, we're going to go to Cursive because they're going to have something cool. I mean,
totally. They're also going to Cursive looking for like, I'm going to go find me a notebook and an eraser and, you know, this and that. And it's really going to put a spring in my step today. I know I'm going to find something great.
You're and proving.
I think our niche is that we're not like, we don't really focus on the practical. Like that's just never really been our forte. We're more of the, you know, the fantastical, the, you know, it's a little bit more of that you want than you need. That's right. What we offer.
Yeah.
I like that. More of what you want, less of what you need.
Well, no, it's like, you know, like we don't sell Filofax. Like I love Filofax, but like it's too practical.
Well, you are proving in your own commitment to the products that you support, to the brands that you support, and sharing their stories and creating your own story. Well, your story's been creative, supporting your story. You're finding loyalty because you're filling the outlook for all of these new, in my mind, like these new youthful buyers. And I think that speaks to where we're going to continue to go. I think that the process is really important, supporting the smaller business, obviously sustainable, minority owned. And I think that your brand supports all of that. It's so important today. And hopefully we'll continue to amplify through really important retailers like yourself. So, I mean, I guess I just want to say thank you. I've learned a lot from you as a merchant. When I was shopping from you, I was a baby merchant. You know, Kate's was one of my first real big gigs, right? And so, like, I learned a lot from you there. And then just working at New York Now and then being able to walk with you both as buyers and just talking with you as much as I do, you know, I'm learning a lot about what the buyer outlook is. So I guess I would say in a way here, you both have been unknowingly a mentor for me. So thank you. I want to thank you.
Wow. You're very welcome. I didn't know we had such powers. That's
nice. Two very powerful people here. And with that, we did kind of touch on it before. Is there anything that is in the future? Are there any ideas that you're churning around? Anything that you want to share with our listeners before we bid you an adieu?
Well,
Where can we find you? Where can we find you?
Doug forbade me for having any ideas or any expansion ideas for a year. So check back in with us next year.
That sounds fair.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, we're both, well, Michael will be 55 next week. I'm 55. So I'm going to say we're both 55. And what's interesting is just, we are worker bees. We're always going like all the time. And I guess where I'm personally at is like, cause Mike talks, we should do another store. And I'm kind of like, oh God, like I'm more into like how much can we fine tune the two that we have, because they're doing great, but I'm like, there's so much more potential. I'm like, instead of like using our, and it's more like focusing our energy on what we have and really maximizing that. I personally would kind of have a hard time at this point doing something new, because in the back of my mind every night when I go to bed, I'm like, oh, we really need to do this, 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 and this at two different stores. I already have all these ideas that like aren't getting fully realized. So I don't know. I guess it's just, I'm into fine tuning the beast that we have.
Fine tuning the beast. Make a note of that, Sarah. I like that one. We're always looking for titles throughout our recording, and that seems to be a really good one. But we'll see. We'll see. Well, with that being said, you have two beautiful locations. You have a beautiful little slinky dog as well. I love following you on Instagram and watching the little elf with his cart go from one store to another and reading all the 20-something.
I never know when he's like doing these things. I'm like, stop.
Well, where can we find you online? How do our listeners get all up in cursive?
So the best way is just through Instagram. We have Cursive New York is the stationery and gift store, and Cursive NY Home is the home store. Just DM through there. That's the best way to do it. Or you can email us.
Or come to New York and go to the West Village. And we're located at 543 Hudson Street and 17 8th Avenue between J and
Buffalo. There you go.
In real life is the best.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Well, with that, we say thank you so much. I know Sarah and I are very appreciative for your time with us, and we look forward to more visits with you in real life and online as well.
And thank both of you guys for everything that you do for our industry.
Yes, thank you both. Nice to see old friends. Yes.
Well, thanks so much, and we will talk with you soon.
Alrighty.
Bye. Sarah, I am so happy we were able to have both Michael and Douglas on our podcast. They are such essential voices in the industry, and I really wasn't kidding when I said I've learned a lot from them.
Oh, yeah. Having a great instinct for what will succeed alongside a practical understanding of the ins and outs of retail only looks easy from the outside. I think no matter the role anyone plays, we can all learn something from taking the time to think things through and carefully respond to whatever curveball is being thrown your way. And speaking of connection, Amy, where can our listeners connect with you?
That was a great segue.
Thank you.
You are welcome. You can connect with me on Instagram, LinkedIn, or email me at work. I always want to highlight our amazing community on my New York Now Spotlight podcast and feature you guys on my Instagram store tours. I'm always available to help connect you to new and needed resources and answer any of your New York Now questions. And Sarah, how can we find you?
Probably the best place to connect with me, the paper nerd, is at thepapernerd.com. You can nerd out with my fabulous stationery coverage, check out my other podcast, The Paper Folds, and access Stationery Trends, the industry's award-winning design-driven trade quarterly as well. It's always a pleasure to learn more about makers and spotlight their work, whether it's in publication, blog, or podcast form.
I love nerding out with you.
Oh, thank you. I love nerding out with you, Amy.
Oh, and if we don't meet up, please do not ever hesitate to reach out to either of us with comments, questions, feedback, suggestions for guests, or anything. Thank you so much, and we will talk with you soon.
Cheers.